You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll talk about state job numbers, income taxes, and more in our Wisconsin News Roundup.
First, a bit of a heat wave is settling in this weekend in a lot of the state.
It's also a good excuse to eat your favorite frozen dessert when the weather heats up like this, whether maybe it's ice cream, frozen custard, or a popsicle. And for this week's edition of Food Friday, we're going to talk about ice cream and the history and the science behind it.
And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite flavors of ice cream, your favorite places to get ice cream or custard around the state? And do you make your own ice cream? How does it turn out? Can you share some with us right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave a comment and find a recipe on the Central Time Facebook page.
And joining us now is an ice cream expert. Maya Warren is a food scientist and frozen dessert expert for Cold Stone Creamery and Pinkberry. She has her PhD from UW-Madison, and she's a familiar name to many people in Wisconsin after winning the Amazing Race. Maya, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And it's always, always a great excuse to talk about ice cream and, of course, eat ice cream. So I'm definitely happy to be back on. Thanks
right.
for having me.
And how did you get so into ice cream in the first place? What's your ice cream origin story?
You know, I was a chemist in undergrad. I went to Carleton College in good old Northfield, Minnesota, and fell in love with chemistry and wanted to be able to apply it in a more applicable way. And so I actually interned at Maltzel Meal Cereal Company, which was right up the street from Carleton, and was not in love with grain, but loved food science. And I asked myself about, I was like 20 years old, you know, Maya, what do you love? And I was like, oh my gosh, I love ice cream. So I decided to go to University of Wisconsin-Madison and research under one of the great professors, Richard Hartel, in the area of phase transition and crystallization, which ice cream, of course, does a phase transition occurs going from the liquid mix to the frozen product, and a lot of crystallization within the ice and the fat globules and all of that. So ended up at UW-Madison and thoroughly enjoyed my time. Cannot say I miss the winters too much, but I definitely do miss campus and the friends and professors that I have there.
Now, I would have guessed that ice cream history wouldn't go back that far. It depended on the invention of the freezer. Turns out, I guess I'm really, really wrong. Can you talk about the early origins of ice cream?
Yes, ice cream actually first started with just the concept of like ice or just having snow. And for instance, maybe putting like honey on it or some kind of sweetener or natural berries. So it started way before the freezer because we could have a frozen type product, although at that time it wasn't whipped, it wasn't aerated, it wasn't in like a Carpigiani freezer or anything like that. So we definitely are fancy in terms of ice cream compared to the way that it used to be made. But there are concepts of ice, and then putting something on top of it is sort of where the origin started. And there's much debate, you know, did it start in China? Is it from Europe? You know, who was the first kind of ancestors, I guess, to create this product? And that's sort of still up for debate. But we can think of it as, okay, if there's snow, if there's a frozen product that then people started putting flavors or honey on top of, that then became later evolved into ice cream as we know it today.
Is there a particular moment where ice cream did sort of hit the public and people said, hey, this is a new thing, and everyone started eating it at once when it was maybe beyond the individual recipes or snow with honey that you talked about?
You know, I'm not actually 100% sure about how that all evolved. I know at some point in Italy, things became getting very popular, and eventually a man brought over from Italy to the United States this concept of ice cream, whatever it was at that point in time. And then eventually, you know, in America, things started popping up in the form of some type of frozen dessert, whether it was aerated, whether it was just a frozen kind of snow with something on top of it. And eventually we then started seeing, you know, shops that pop up, and eventually your fast food restaurants start coming, and then those fast food restaurants start serving soft serve. And, you know, nowadays how we have ice cream, how we enjoy it, and kind of what we know about it has evolved so much from the beginning. And it's very, very interesting to see, especially like a lot of these artisan companies or brands, come out with such new and unique flavors, as well as kind of how we experience the product. It's no longer just a bowl and a spoon. You know, it's like the waffle cone, or it's a flight of different frozen desserts, or it's more of in a popsicle form, or, you know, it just varies how we even experience it now. So it's not even kind of comparable to how we once used to eat quote-unquote ice cream to how we do it now.
When you talk about, you know, snow with honey on it or whatever, that's got the ice component, but it's missing the most important part in my book, the cream side of it. So what is it that makes dairy frozen dessert product so special and awesome?
So what one thing that makes it so special is that in the United States, we actually have a legal definition for ice cream. It has to have 10% or more milk fat, which is where the dairy component comes in. And notice that I said milk fat. So we often see these products on the market that may have, you know, soy milk or coconut milk or almond milk, or maybe not 10% milk fat in it. And the fat source may be coming from coconut fat, or it could be coming from some kind of vegetable oil or safflower oil, sunflower oil, you name it. Those aren't really considered ice cream. They're more of a frozen dessert type product. And I think what makes ice cream so special with having the milk fat component is the fact that we actually crave kind of that creaminess sensation or perception that comes as a result of that milk fat. And, you know, now I feel like the public is really embracing fat a little bit more than we used to. And I love that because I love fat in ice cream. And there's this phenomena called partial coalescence, which is like the agglomeration or the partial agglomeration, because they're not fully agglomerated together in the sense that it becomes one globule, the partial agglomeration of fat globules that are hindered by a crystalline fat network. And that is there because of the milk fat properties in which the product is frozen. And so milk fat is very dear to us. The more partial coalescence you have in your product, the more creaminess perception that you have. So when you have a sorbet, which is very general in the sense that it's sugar, it's water, and it's maybe a fruit puree or something like that, and it's frozen. But then when you add a milk component to it, you really bring a different texture, and it's a more of a smooth, more of a creamy sensation that occurs because you increase your total solids, you bring in fat and other ingredients, or the components of milk that really make the product what it is.
It's getting toasty outside, so we're talking ice cream today for Food Friday with Maya Warren. She's a food scientist and a frozen dessert expert for Cold Stone Creamery and Pinkberry, and she got her PhD in food science from UW-Madison. And Maya, so take us through a very basic ice cream recipe. At its most simple, how can we make a standard ice cream?
So, you know, making ice cream at home can be quite simple, but it also can be quite challenging. I recommend actually using heavy whipping cream and half and half, and not just using milk. One, because the heavy whipping cream and the half and half can bring in more fat, it can bring in more body, more texture to the product. And I also encourage people to use egg yolks. And the egg yolks actually act as emulsifiers, which help agglomerate those fat globules, as I had just mentioned, the importance of that fat agglomeration. But the egg yolk also adds a bit of body and texture to it. Sometimes, depending upon how much egg yolk you add to the recipe, you may have a little bit more closer to a custard. And of course, in Wisconsin, we definitely know a lot about custards. And custards tend to be served fresh off. And actually, at home, a lot of people tend to make more custards than they do ice cream because they add egg yolk, and that egg yolk adds a lot of richness and can provide a lot more smoothness to the product. You have to add the sugar. I personally like my ice cream to be a little bit on the sweet side, so I may add a little bit more sugar than the normal, but about 2.5 cups of half and half, 2.5 cups of heavy whipping cream, about a cup and a fourth or so of sugar. I say about 8 to 10 egg yolks. Sometimes I do about 12, or sometimes I do about 6, depending upon the heaviness of the ice cream that I'm looking for. And then, you know, you put all of that in a pot, and, you know, I'm hoping that we put up the recipe so people can see it. And then you can cool it, because, of course, you have to cook it and cook the egg and pasteurize it. Cool it, and then you can freeze it on one of your home freezers, whether you're freezing in a brine solution with rock salt and ice, or you're freezing in like a Cuisinart-type freezer where it's more of an electric freezer process where you take the bowl that's been frozen in your freezer, the refrigerant inside is now cool and almost and basically frozen, and then you can spin your ice cream that way. But then there's also, you know, ice cream in a bag that a lot of students do in their science classes. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, but I definitely recommend using the higher fat, making sure you use the heavy whipping cream, the half and half, and then also including that egg yolk. It may not be the smoothest product in the world because the length of time that it takes to freeze the ice cream at home, maybe about half an hour, 35 minutes or so. It's a bit longer than it is in industry. If you're at an artisan ice cream shop, they usually freeze the ice cream on a batch freezer, and those can be frozen in about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. If you're getting a pint of ice cream that's from the grocery store, those have been frozen in a matter of about 1 to 2 minutes. So imagine 30 minutes of freezing and how those ice crystals can grow and grow over time. So I encourage people to make the ice cream, put it in the freezer, maybe put a bit of parchment paper over it so you can sort of help hinder some of that water migration via the airflow of the freezer unit at your home.
We're talking to Maya Warren, food scientist and expert on frozen desserts. She got her PhD in food science at UW-Madison, and we are talking about ice cream and custard, making your own and just going out and eating it.
And we want to hear from you now that it's starting to get warm outside. Do you make your own ice cream? Do you have a favorite ice cream flavor? Any secrets, tips of the trade? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment over on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let us know if you have a favorite flavor anywhere around the state. 800-642-1234. More coming up, and maybe we'll hear from you here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. Right now we're talking about ice cream on Food Friday. And we'd love to hear from you about this. Are you a big ice cream fan, or do you prefer maybe the Wisconsin specialty frozen custard? What is your go-to flavor? And any troubles making ice cream at home? Let us know. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Maya Warren stays with us. She can answer your ice cream making questions. She's a food scientist, got her PhD in food science at UW-Madison. Maya, vanilla ice cream tends to be the standby go-to. What are some easy flavors to experiment with if we want to move beyond the basic vanilla?
Oh, definitely. You know, I really, really, really encourage people to look at like maybe a jam or like a raspberry jam or maybe peaches. You know, fruits do very, very well, especially if you can, you know, sort of kind of baby them at home and saute them and add a little brown sugar and all of that. I'm a very, very, very big fruit person, but I'm also kind of the person that lives on the edge. I think a little bit of maybe avocado in there, a little habanero, actually does very, very well. So do beets. Beets actually pair very, very well with ice cream. And, you know, right now there's a lot of trends in kind of smoky flavors and spices. Recently, I was in New York for some business travel, and I tried a turmeric ice cream. And it was very, very, very good. And I also had a cardamom and a rose. So, you know, look at the pantry. Look at your cabinet and see what you have, see what kind of spices you have. You never know how they're going to pair. So I encourage people to try it and kind of live on the edge a little. But, you know, a basic vanilla is always good, and vanilla actually enhances a lot of different flavors. So if you're making chocolate, add a little vanilla to that so that it can enhance the chocolate flavor. Also, that sweet, salty kind of thing is really hot right now. So maybe a little sea salt in the vanilla, or a caramel, or maybe a burnt butter. Those are all really, really common flavors that are coming up in the market and that you'll really see, as well as some florals and some teas. So maybe a lavender kind of tea, honey tea flavor. But those are all things that people can try in small batches right at their home.
So Maya, when we're talking about ingredients like beets or sweet corn, say the Kirill here at WPR is a fan of sweet corn ice cream, does it become more like a savory accompaniment more than a dessert, or would you still call that a dessert? Does it still have sugar in it?
You know, I still call it a dessert because it still goes under the legal definition of ice cream. It still has a 10% fat. It still has, you know, a good amount of sugar, whether it's 12% or whether it's, you know, towards 14, 15%. It still is an ice cream. But you know, now society is more acceptable of the non-traditional, quote unquote. So not just cookies and cream, not just Reese's or anything like that, you know, not just using the sweets with the sweets, but maybe pairing things that we tend to think of as more savory with the sweets. And so when we look at the corn or when we look at the beets, both of those naturally have a lot of sugars in them as well. So those really do tend to pair themselves very well with ice cream. But so does avocado because of the amount of fat that avocado has in ice cream. So not just using your traditional fruits. I've also seen a lot of cilantro or basil or cucumber ice creams. And those can be very, very refreshing because those are naturally already refreshing when we put them in beverages or anything of that nature. So, you know, I really encourage people to just try the different things that are out there that you may have in your pantry because you never know what may really pair well.
We surveyed some of our colleagues here at WPR, and a lot of them, surprise, like ice cream. Our news director, Noah Ovshinsky, says that he likes a vanilla chocolate chip ice cream. And that makes me wonder, you know, I like lots of chunks of different kinds of things, mostly chocolatey things in ice cream. When we're putting in those discrete solids in the ice cream making process, when do they go in?
Oh, definitely. So during the ice cream making process, especially when you're making them at home, you want to put in what we call particulates, which are those cookie pieces, those nuts.
It sounds so appetizing when you say globule in particulate.
So those particulates, which is what they're called, or we could just call them cookies and nuts and mix-ins. That's totally fine, too. But when we're making them at home, you want to let the ice cream firm up a little bit so you actually see ice cream and not just mix. So let it firm up a bit and have a few minutes of rotations of that dasher, that blade in the freezer. Let that rotate a little so you see kind of bulking of the product. That's actually the mix forming into ice cream as we know it. Those fat globules are agglomerating together. Those ice crystals are forming. And when that starts to happen, that ice cream can actually handle the bulkiness of additional things like chocolate chips or Oreos or pecans, cookie dough pieces, sprinkles, you name it. But if you're looking to maybe add a jam sauce or a caramel sauce or a little fudge into it and you want to add more of a ripple, I recommend waiting a little bit longer to add those because those are have a little bit of a sometimes thinner viscosity, and they can get mixed in too much, and so you don't have a ripple of chocolate anymore. Maybe you have what looks like chocolate ice cream. So in order to have that ripple effect, you want your ice cream to firm up a bit more, maybe 1 to 2 minutes before you're ready to take it out. Drizzle in some of that fudge or caramel or your honey or jam sauce, and let that kind of variegate its way. It's called a variegate. Let that kind of variegate its way through and have a ripple effect in your product. My mouth is actually watering just thinking about
yeah,
it right
me too.
Now.
Me too.
I'm like, I should go get some ice cream right now.
As soon as the show is over, you gotta wait.
Right. One thing that I also want to add to that, so say, you know, you're making a crisp at home and one of your favorite crisps that you want to put into your ice cream. I really recommend, you know, making your crisp and making sure you have maybe a little bit of oil that coats the outside of it. So then when you put it in your product, it won't get soggy as fast. Often when you know, may make ice cream at home and you're putting in different pieces of like bread type materials, whether it's a crisp or a cookie, that may not have an oil layer on the outside can get soggy in the product.
I want to take a caller now. We've got Tracy in Muskego who wants to join us. Tracy, hi.
Hi there, guys. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
I have just something to share that we do when we make ice cream. There's a method that we use, and I'm a preschool teacher, so I've done the plastic bag method at school as well, and that works great with little people. But I acquired something several years ago. It's called an ice cream ball, and it's actually a container that has like a cylinder in the middle where you put all your ice cream ingredients, and then on the outside you put your salt and your ice. And then it's got another seal on the other side. So then when you have all the ingredients in there, you toss the ball back and forth, and that mixes the ingredients inside, and it moves the ice around and everything. And it makes a really fantastic, quick, small amount of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually get exercise when you're making this ice cream, Tracy?
Yeah, and it's funny. We take it camping with our family, too.
Oh,
you know?
Perfect. What a great idea. And
yes.
I mean, this is a small batch thing, but Maya, how about the ice cream ball method?
You know, I think it's great. I think it's great for, you know, a lot of kids to get involved in having a hand in making the ice cream. And it's fun. I mean, it's pretty much a brine solution on the outside, and it's a little barrel in the middle, then the ingredients inside of the barrel. So it's very similar to that brine solution that I previously described of rock salt and ice. I love it. You know, you can't make huge quantities of it. That would be a lot of little ice cream balls, kicking back and forth. But I love it because it keeps people entertained, you know, and kids really do like it.
Tracy, thanks a lot for that call. Maya, as we start to wrap up, I know I can't ask you to pick one favorite flavor. That'd be too hard. But right now, you had to pick. You want to eat some ice cream. What do you want?
You know, right now, I want a good old candied buttered pecan that I make. It's very delicious. Actually, I call it double buttered candied pecan. It's pecans full of butter, lots of brown sugar, lightly salted with a little bit of sea salt, and the ice cream that I make has about 40% overrun, so not a ton of air added to the product, which is what overrun is, with a nice Madagascar bourbon vanilla and the buttered pecans on top of it, and it's absolutely delicious. So that's what I could get. If I could make that right now, I would.
All right. Well, Maya, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you all.
That's Maya Warren. She's a food scientist and frozen dessert expert for Cold Stone Creamery and Pinkberry, and she got her PhD in food science from UW-Madison. You can still share your ice cream favorites and pick up a recipe, a basic frozen custard recipe, on the Central Time Facebook page. I've never made frozen ice cream or custard or any of that. You?
I have made it. We got it as a wedding gift, an ice cream maker, and mm-hmm. So I was pretty into it for a while. I made raspberry sorbet and raspberry ice cream. For some reason, I was really into raspberries,
yeah.
And I think we tried some mint stuff, too. It's a lot of fun.
So you need to break that out again and then start bringing in the things for
Clearly.
The Central Time team to test.
Or we could get the ice cream ball and we could toss it back and forth during the show.
Or in the office all day. We'd burn off like a tenth of the calories we got from eating the ice cream. Again, check out that frozen custard recipe on the Central Time Facebook page.